Hi, all. My name is Kirby Fry. Hello?
This is Tim. I just wanted to let you know I was able to get in.
Oh, great. Hey, Tim. We're just going to go ahead and get started, and I'll just go over a few things since it's a virtual meeting, and then the attendance that I have listed, and then I'll hand it over to you all, okay?
All right.
All right. Well, welcome everyone to the Region 1 Planning and Policy Council meeting. My name is Kirby Fye with the department. If you joined via WebEx, I'm listed as Amy Holland today. But I'm Kirby Fye. Just some housekeeping things. Per Governor Lee's Executive Order 51, this meeting is being held virtually and will be recorded. The recording will be available on the department website within the next few days. If you haven't already, please mute your phones or your computers unless you're asking a question or presenting, because it gives a lot of feedback. So I'm going to go ahead and go through the attendance of the individuals that I have that have signed on via WebEx, and then we'll go through the individuals that have called in. So like I said, my name is Kirby Fye. I'm here with the department. I have Avis Easley. I have Jay Zimmerman, Jeannie Price, Jill Scott, Kubra or Cal Bryant, Kurt Hipple, Matt Yancey, Melanie Eisen, Nita Gross, Vonda Wagner, Zach Blair. I know we have Samantha Slagle, Vice Chair for the Region 1 Council, on the phone. And Tim Perry, Chair for the Planning and Policy, Region 1 Planning and Policy Council, on the phone as well. Any other callers that I have missed, please state your name.
Wendy Ramsey, T2, Recovery Health and Facilitation. Hello?
Anyone else? You might be muted.
This is Melissa Birdwell, CNY Division Director for Frontier Health.
Hi, Melissa. Anyone else on the phone that hasn't stated their name?
Stephanie Bullock, Regional Housing Facilitator.
Hi, Stephanie. Anyone else? All right, Tim, Samantha, I'll hand it over to you. If I see anyone else join the call in the middle of the meeting, I'll state that towards the end of the meeting for your minutes.
Hey, thank you. Sam, I appreciate you willing to take this on, and I may have to step out, but I'll try to get started. This is Tim Perry with the Chair of Region 1. Everyone should have got a copy of the minutes of our last meeting. They should have come in the email that announced about this meeting. Hopefully you've had a chance to look over that. At this time, I will entertain a motion to approve those minutes as they were sent to you. Do I hear a motion to that effect?
Motion. This is Sam Slagle.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
This is Jill Scott. I'll second.
Thank you, Jill. Motion made and seconded. Any changes in it? If not, the minutes will stand approved as read. Old business. Just one reminder in the old business category, and that is that we are continuing the member enrollment and application process. Since we've not been able to meet in a face-to-face venue, we will still be reaching out to individuals and trying electronically to get information back from them through the application process to continue enrollment. So if you know people that have not got enrollment applications or have not been reached out by myself or our secretary at Region 1, please let us know. We would like to make sure that they get the application and that they get on the roster as an enrollment in Region 1. So we are continuing that process, and we'll do so for the next while until we get our roster updated and accurate and are able to get members enrolled. Any other old business? If not, we'll go on to new business. We have a couple of things we wanted to update folks on the call today with. Start off with this question that had come to us. A couple of different external providers and community stakeholders had asked about the Frontier Health update, current update on our reopening of clinics through COVID-19. So, Sam, I'm going to turn it over to you and let you kind of give a brief update on where we are in Frontier about our reopening of our clinics.
Okay. Thank you, Tim. We have, you know, we originally, we kind of, we all stayed in offices and we did audio only there for a while. And then we worked with a cutoff date that end of July. And then, of course, we got an extension from TennCare and everybody's extended the option for audio calls. So we're running sort of a hybrid system, whatever's kind of best for the clients. So we have options of audio, Zoom, and face-to-face if that's what the need is for the client. We can do this as we know of now through the end of August. We were hoping for all that to be extended on the option of audio calls for people to get treatment. And then, of course, if somebody needs to come into the office, we're following CDC guidelines. We're minding 6 feet. We have mask protocol in all of our areas. We have screeners at the front door. One thing we've done is we've gotten stickers, just little stickers. Once you go past our screener, we put a sticker on your lapel, on your name badge or something, and that way everybody in the building knows, hey, you've been through that screening. I know that minimum, all those questions have been asked, your temperature's been taken, and you've gotten the thumbs up for today. Another thing we've been able to do is kind of create some safe spaces. So say we have a walk-in, we have a crisis situation, we have somebody that needs, you know, injections, so there has to be that physical touch there. We've created spaces maybe near the front, more towards the entrance of our buildings, higher cleaning protocol in those areas, only certain people go in there, that kind of thing. Appointment reminders, you know, reminding folks, hey, you're going to have a mask. We do have the audio option. And just making everybody mindful of what our protocol is. And that's sort of what we're doing as far as being reopening in the outpatient centers. Of course, our hospital, our Turning Point facilities, all that has been running full steam this whole time, and they continue to do quite well at keeping everybody safe over there. And I'll turn it over to the next person there, Tim.
Okay, thank you, Sam. We do want to, you know, we always, through this whole process, wanted the public to know we are open and ready for business. We are, and this kind of leads into the next update, we are putting staff into our school systems. We are now in all 8 counties and all school systems across our counties. We have presence with mental health providers there. The schools have been very, very cautious about the reopening process. They've been very mindful of the community spread of the virus in our region, that it's been escalating for the last several weeks. And so they are taking extreme precautions to try to mitigate the spread in the school system. And they're offering different options, and we'll talk about that in just a moment. We are having our school-based staff reporting back this week to most of the schools. They will be able to help reach kids for mental health and behavioral health needs virtually. They are doing some presence on school campus so that they will be available as needed to the staff at the schools. We anticipate there will be probably a significant number of unique issues in the school system with kids this year compared to previous years. So mental health needs are going to probably be a high acuity and a high priority. And that's why we have trained and positioned our staff with trauma-informed training and school-based specific training to deal with students as they get ready to come back, whether that's in a virtual process or in a face-to-face traditional classroom process. So we are preparing ourselves for that, and I think we're in a position pretty good at this point to be able to help with the mental health needs of our schools in our area. With that being said, another question that has come to us that was asked to be addressed is what we know currently about the plans for our school systems regarding reopening. So I'm going to turn the mic over to Nita Gross, and Melissa Birdwell is also on the call so she can help fill in some too. But Nita Gross will give us an update of our local school systems. And this is a changing environment. It changes nearly daily. This is as of yesterday, as far as we know, for our school system. So, Nita, I'll turn it over to you.
Tim, I don't remember hearing Nita in roll call. Maybe Melissa can cover that base.
No, I'm here.
Oh, hey, awesome.
Hey, and they did call my name. I just couldn't get my mic to work a minute. So, but okay, so as Tim was saying, he asked me about 2 weeks ago if I would do this, and I was getting emails daily updating. It changed every day. So this is, as he said, as of last night. Johnson County will start August 17th with a parent choice for either virtual or in-person. Worcester County started yesterday, August 3rd, and the first month will be all virtual, and then they will reevaluate at the end of that month. Hawkins County will start date is August 17th with traditional classes, and they will reevaluate at that time. Hancock start date was yesterday, August 3rd, with traditional classes, but virtual option is available for parents that choose that. Rogersville City start date is August 17th with a virtual option or traditional in-person classes. Greenville City start date is August 5th, which is tomorrow, with virtual only through the end of August, and then they will reevaluate every 2 weeks. Greene County will start, their start date is August the 17th, full virtual, and will evaluate every 2 weeks, but they do have a parent option for virtual, even if they do go face-to-face. Sullivan County start date is August 5th with virtual only through August the 14th, and they will evaluate at that time. Kingsport City, their start date is August 10th with traditional classes planned, but no final decision at this time. Johnson City schools will start August 10th with virtual only for the first 3 weeks, and then they will reevaluate. Carter County, their start date is August 10th with traditional classes and a parent option for virtual. Unicoi County, their start date is August 10th on a staggered basis for students to pick up laptops, and then they're going virtual only on August 24th, and they will reevaluate thereafter every week. Bristol City schools, their start date is August 6th, virtual only through August 14th, and then students are to return in person, but the school is reevaluating weekly. Elizabethton City, start date with kids coming back staggered between August 10th through the 14th, and the first full day will be August 17th. At last discussion, they will be virtual only and reevaluate every 2 weeks. Questions that they're still mulling about and are concerned with are parents who work, special ed, 504s, and computer internet access. All kids will have computers, but not all homes have internet access. And so some of the schools have put out community requests to churches to attend a meeting to talk about churches maybe opening their doors for Wi-Fi access. And then the hotspots, a lot of the hotspots are at the schools, but if you're doing virtual, you're not allowed to be in the school. So that would mean you would be doing your virtual learning, utilizing that hotspot in your car. So there's still a lot of concerns, a lot of questions. It's changing daily, and I expect it to continue to change daily for quite some time. That's it.
Thank you, Nita. In addition to that, I asked Nita to give us a brief update on some new changes in law pertaining to child abuse reporting for schools. So, Nita, you want to go ahead and update us on that as well?
Yes. The schools, there's a new statute, and it is public chapter number 708, House Bill 2461. the Tennessee code says that they're changing it so that if a school has to identify a child abuse reporter coordinator and a backup, and so they will act as the central person who all abuse reports go through. So they're charged with keeping a log of abuse reports, being a liaison between law enforcement, DCS, schools, and parents. The teacher is still charged with being a mandated reporter. So if a student reports to a teacher, that teacher, it's still her responsibility, his or her responsibility to report it. However, they also have to report it to the identified school coordinator who will keep a log and who will be the person that DCS and law enforcement has to go through. They are supposed to do minimal facts interviewing, not asking a lot of questions, not leading the child in any way, and keeping all those records within a safe, locked cabinet. And I think that's pretty much all of that law. They're supposed to make every effort also to write down the child's exact wording, and they are to refrain from making any statements to the child about the alleged abuse, the alleged abuser, or the consequences of the child reporting the alleged abuse. So they're not to talk about any of those things with the child. So I would look for school counselors most likely to be identified as that abuse coordinator, but it could be different at every school since not all schools have a full-time counselor.
Thank you, Nita.
You're welcome.
Appreciate those updates, and we will hold off on questions to the end of the part of the new business. Was Courtney Malk on the call? I can't recall. Courtney, are you on the line? Okay, we'll assume she didn't get on. For the Traces Foster Home Program, we're going to give an update on that we had been asked about. So if she gets to join us, we'll let her give us an update. I do want to, as we round this up, to continue thinking of our needs for our area, for our needs assessment, as we think about the unique needs that may be different now in our COVID-19 pandemic world, as they may have been in years past. It may reflect in what we now consider would be high needs for our area. So keep that in mind as we go forward as we consider about needs. Any questions from anyone regarding what we've reported on so far about the clinics for Frontier, the school reopening, or child abuse reporting? Okay, if not, then we'll move on to our reports by our various committees and providers and stakeholders. We'll begin with the adult committee. Sam, do you have anything to report from the adult committee?
Yeah, I have a couple things. Frontier has partnered with SAMHSA. We have a couple grants going on that are COVID specific. With our crisis Turning Point Hospital, there is a hotline, a COVID crisis counseling and resource hotline. It's open 12 p.m. to 10 p.m. 7 days a week. So coping skills, debriefing, education, referral, outreach, all that kind of stuff related to COVID, folks have that outlet where they can get to that pretty much 24/7. And that contact number would be 833-4-FH-COVID. So that's a good resource for folks. And with also our outpatient centers for adults, there's also some resources there for folks to obtain counseling services, case management, medical pharmacology, and that sort of thing with
within Frontier that would be paid for via the grant. So to qualify for that, of course, it has to be a COVID kind of related stressor, which I think at this point in the game about any of us could qualify for that. But it's out there for the medical community, the helper community, where they have the additional stressors of what's going on. There's also a piece in there about folks that actually have insurance, but, you know, this year nobody's gone anywhere. Many folks have not paid down their deductibles. They've not had any real medical services. So if somebody has just a huge deductible that they can't meet, I mean, we're already at the second part of the year. So there's that piece in there that if somebody just financially cannot do what they need to do with their primary insurance, they may also qualify. There's a second grant out there for substance abuse related to COVID. So if anybody has any needs and feel like they wouldn't qualify for other things such as safety net or if they have another insurance, you know, they can reach out to any Frontier Health Center and we can help and see if we can help get them into services. That's all I have on the adult team right now.
Thank you, Sam. Appreciate that. CNY committee, Kayla was not able to be with us. I appreciate Melissa Birdwell for filling in for her and also for taking the minutes. Our assistant secretary, Jennifer Delahousky, has resigned and is no longer going to be able to be with us. So we'll be looking for a replacement for assistant secretary. Kayla will continue as secretary, but was not able to join the call today. So Melissa, report from the CNY committee.
Sure. Kayla had asked me to talk about schools as well and just some of the school services that Frontier provides. As Tim said earlier, we are in all the counties, all eight counties in Northeast Tennessee in some capacity. So I'm going to go through some of the various programs that we have and the areas where those are located. One of those is the School-Based Behavioral Health Liaison Program. That is a grant-funded program, and that one actually is in all of the counties except Hancock. However, we did write a grant for Hancock County as well. We just haven't heard back on that one yet. That was the expansion grant that was opened up. We also have a student assistance program, what we call SAP, and that's for at-risk youth, and that's in Sullivan County and Kingsport City Schools. We have an alcohol and drug prevention program, and that one is in Hancock, Hawkins, and Sullivan counties. That works with kids who have been identified as at risk for use but haven't actually used substances yet, so we're trying to catch them young. Then we have Project Basic, which actually Nita does, and that is for kindergarten through third grades. That's in Green, Hawkins, Hancock, Carter, and Unicoi counties. And then we have school-based mental health therapists who are in Bristol, Tennessee City Schools, Elizabethton City, Green County, and Greenville City Schools, as well as Kingsport City and Carter County. excuse me. And then we have in Johnson City School System, the HEROES program, which is in all of the schools within that system. All of the school-based programs are able to provide, as we said before, in-person services as well as virtual, as we need to with some of the schools starting back virtually. So staff are getting very good at not only face-to-face services, but computer use as well. So that's been good to see. And as we mentioned also, the staff are trained in trauma-informed care and several other trainings that they attend. So hopefully we're going to get off to a good start in this school year and things will go really well.
Thank you, Melissa. Anything else from the CNY committee?
That's it on my end.
All right. Legislative committee, I don't have anything to report from the legislative committee at this time. Do we have anything to report from any MCOs?
Yes. Hi, this is Kubriana Kalbryant. I have a quarterly report that I've been giving on all the other planning and policy regional meetings. United Healthcare Community Plan has been working on the following. Expanded telehealth following 10-care guidance, increased support to providers needing to transition patients between levels of care, targeted efforts on food deserts in Tennessee with United Healthcare food box delivery, and have been holding weekly leadership calls with provider leadership, TAMHO, the department, and 10-care to address the COVID response, care barriers, and methods for ensuring access to care. I sent a copy of that to you, Tim, for the minutes, so you can forward them.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Appreciate that. Any other MCO? All right. Do we have any inpatient facilities on the line to report? Anyone from Crisis or CSU? And anyone from Youth Villages? Anyone from NAMI? Community Justice? Jill, do you want to give us an update on TCCY?
Hi, sure. We are still continuing educational opportunities online. Our next series is coming up. It's a three-part series with Pastor Edward Palmer. The first one will be Implicit Bias. And that one is August 18th from 1 until 4:30. And then following that, we'll have Cultural Collisions, and that's September the 3rd from 1 to 4:30. And then let's talk race, and that's September the 16th, 1 until 4:30. My understanding is that Implicit Bias is full at this time, but and then we'll be releasing opportunity for the other two a little bit later, closer to the dates. Other than that, I think that's about it.
Thank you, Jill. Anyone from ADRC? TSPN? MHCA. Hey, any other provider? I think Courtney may have joined us. Courtney, are you on the line now?
Yes, I'm on the line.
You want to give us an update report on our PRACES foster care program?
Absolutely. So right now, we are still actively training foster parents. So the department has allowed providers to move to a more virtual platform. So we are able to provide online training to our foster parents right now. And we found that it's actually been really beneficial. Foster parents seem to engage in the online trainings well. So we are going through the process of approving parents and training parents using this online platform. We're still able to go out to the home to complete the required home visits, but for the training piece, we're doing that online right now.
Okay, anything else? All right, thank you, Courtney.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other? Sorry. Any other providers or any reports before we turn it over to the department? All right, then we'll turn it over to Kirby and to Zach to give us an update on the department and a legislative update. So, Kirby.
Hi, thanks, Tim. Just a few updates I have from the department before I hand it over to Zach, who's going to give an update around the 2020 legislative summary. My first update, Tim and Sam, you'll get an email about this shortly, but I just wanted to put it on the update so you can begin thinking about it. We, each year, a joint annual report is produced and delivered to the governor and state legislature to list accomplishments, challenges, and plans for the future. The joint annual report is a collaborative effort between the department, the regional planning and policy councils, and the statewide planning and policy council. I'm requesting this information from each regional council for the FY 2020 joint annual report. So that would be July 1, 2019, through June 30th, 2020, to be sent to me via email no later than September 18th. I know it seems far away, but it'll be here before we know it. So just something to put on your radar. And like I said, I'll send out a reminder email about this shortly. The year two FY 2021 part of this three-year plan is in progress. Regional councils will have an opportunity to review within the coming weeks. Development of the FY 2021 mental health block grant is underway. Statewide and regional planning and policy councils will have an opportunity to review soon. The 2020 legislative summary is completed. Zach will be talking about this briefly after my update, but I want to let you know that it has been completed and it has been posted to the department website. Everything I'm talking about here, including the links, I'll send to you and Kayla, so Tim, Samantha, and Kayla, I'll send it to you via email so you can include in your minutes for everyone to view.
Your phones are on mute.
I got it. It happens. The department is receiving a $2 million federal grant to provide additional services in response to COVID-19 over the next 16 months. The funding will be used to bolster the state's existing crisis services continuum, behavioral health safety net, and substance abuse treatment and recovery services. The department's grant proposal included a comprehensive implementation approach, which includes five facets: assessment, capacity, planning, implementation, and evaluation. Services will be planned, developed, and delivered with a special focus on telehealth treatment to ensure statewide availability. I believe Samantha talked about this briefly in her adult committee report. The department is also receiving almost $1 million from the federal government to support the mental health needs of Tennesseans living through the COVID-19 pandemic. The grant for $966,380 is through the FEMA Crisis Counseling and Training Program. The funding will provide outreach and support services in all 95 Tennessee counties. Department staff will be working with community behavioral health agencies to deliver these services. And lastly, Tennessee's healthcare workers and first responders who are on the front lines of the COVID-19 pandemic response have a new resource to reach out to about feelings of stress, anxiety, sadness, or depression related to work. The COVID-19 emotional support line for healthcare workers is available to call at 888-642-7886. The support line is a collaborative project among the Mental Health Active Response Team, otherwise known as MHART, the Tennessee Association of Alcohol, Drug, and Other Addiction Services, also known as TADIS, the National Association of Social Workers, Tennessee Chapter, and the department. Specially trained mental health professionals who answer calls through the line can provide emotional support through active listening, help callers identify and address basic needs, and provide reference tools for managing stress and making a plan for self-care. It is important to note the support line does not offer mental health treatment and is not intended to replace mental health crisis or suicide prevention services. That's what I have from the department. Zach, I know you have quite a bit that you want to discuss, so I'm going to hand it over to you.
Thank you, Kerb. And thank you, Tim. Good morning, everybody. I will, first say congratulations to Region 1 since they're the first region to have the legislative summary in hand. I think everyone probably heard and realized that this was a strange legislative session this year. Typically, legislative session will start in January and will go through April or May, but because of the COVID pandemic, we had to have a lengthy recess in the middle of March that went through June. And so the public chapters and the related items related to legislation took a little bit longer to publish this year than they typically do. So that's the reason why we had a delay in the publishing of the summary. But it was finished and approved last week and is now posted to the department's website. And hopefully you all have a copy of that to be able to take a look at and follow along if you would like to. Since the summary is complete and the information's available, I won't be as lengthy as I have been with the other councils since the document's available. But I will touch on a couple highlights on the document, and if you have any questions, happy to take those, whether it's about the legislative process in general that occurred this year or about the bills individually as best I can. But under the category of mental health-related legislation that starts on page one, the first bill listed is Public Chapter 531, which was Senate Bill 673, House Bill 787. This requires the Department of Veterans Services to provide suicide prevention training to employees of the department who directly interact with veterans. I think everybody realizes the crisis that is veteran suicide and looking for active ways to address that. And hopefully that training that is provided through the Department of Veterans Services that to those employees that directly interact with veterans will assist with helping address that need in Tennessee with our veterans, again, who face that as a consistent issue that we've seen in the last couple of years. So excited to see how that hopefully will at least begin making a dent in our numbers that we've seen all over the country and here in Tennessee. Moving down to House Joint Resolution 1, as you know, joint resolutions are not changes in the law, but they are expressions of intent or positions by the legislature. And House Joint Resolution 1 recognizes teen suicide as a health crisis in Tennessee. So we are proud that the legislature in Tennessee has made that policy statement for the state, and recognizing that that continues to be a concern and an issue in the state of Tennessee. On page two of the summary, and it's labeled under the header Substance Abuse and Controlled Substances Related Education, a couple bills that I'd like to point out. The first one is Senate Bill 1912, House Bill 1917, again, which is now Public Chapter 573, requires physicians and other healthcare practitioners to provide interventional procedures and alternative treatments as disclosures to patients or their legal representatives before beginning opioid treatment. And some of those could be non-opioid medicinal drugs or products, occupational therapy, interventional procedures, a list of alternative treatments that need to be disclosed and explained by that practitioner before opioids are prescribed. Another tool for practitioners to use before having to prescribe that opioid and to hopefully assist with lowering our numbers when it comes to opioid addiction in Tennessee. Senate Bill 2202, House Bill 2269, this was an administration bill from the governor's office that changed and lined up state law with the federal law on tobacco purchase. So it raised the minimum age from 18 to 21 years. And I'm not sure a lot of people are aware of this, but the Department of Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services participates with the Department of Agriculture, who is the regulatory authority over tobacco retailers in enforcing underage compliance of the retail sale of tobacco. And it was the opinion of the Department of Agriculture prior to this law change that they would have difficulty enforcing the new change from 18 years to 21 years if the state law wasn't changed. And the reason why this is important is our block grant funding is contingent on the state being able to demonstrate a minimum percentage of a minimum percentage of compliance with underage sales at tobacco retailers. So it's important that we continue to be able to participate in the enforcement of that and be able to demonstrate that our state is compliant in preventing underage sales of tobacco. So again, this lines that up with federal law and allows the Department of Agriculture to continue to enforce that age requirement when it comes to the sale of tobacco products to certain individuals based on their age. Senate Bill 2552, House Bill 2625 requires the Departments of Health, Mental Health and Substance Abuse Services, and the Division of Teen Care to collaborate together to provide educational materials for providers who employ medication-assisted treatment, specifically those that prescribe buprenorphine and methadone for MAT. It requires all these departments to come together and develop educational materials for best practices and to make folks aware of the issue surrounding neonatal abstinence syndrome. And so that's something that we will be doing with our sister agencies at Department of Health and at Teen Care to make those educational materials available for providers and facilities who employ those types of treatments in their facilities or as part of their practice. Senate Bill 1060, House Bill 656, Public Chapter 761. This is one of the bills, along with another, that makes some pretty significant changes in buprenorphine prescribing for non-physician providers. So it allows this first bill allows nurse practitioners and physician assistants who work in both community mental health centers or in federally qualified health centers to prescribe buprenorphine under certain circumstances and restrictions. This is the first time that non-physicians in Tennessee, other providers will be allowed to prescribe buprenorphine, and some important provisions of that. In this particular bill, in the federally qualified health centers and the community mental health centers, a physician can only supervise four nurse practitioners or physician assistants at any one time to write prescriptions for only 50 patients or fewer at one time, have to obtain a data waiver, and have to work under the direct supervision of a physician. So there are limitations to that, but again, this is an expansion of practice for those practitioners and makes access available for that prescribing that did not previously exist in Tennessee. And we were the only state, according to my understanding, that didn't allow nurse practitioner or physician assistant prescribing a buprenorphine before this particular law changed. Following that, Senate Bill 1938 and House Bill 1980, which is now Public Chapter 771, is similar as it allows physician assistants and nurse practitioners who work in licensed OBOTs, the non-residential office-based opiate treatment facilities, to also prescribe buprenorphine for use in medication-assisted therapy. And again, there are several limitations to that. You have to have direct supervision of a physician with an active data waiver from the DEA. The prescriber has to have a data waiver from the DEA. In this particular bill, the supervising physician can only supervise two nurse practitioners or physician assistants at one time But the difference here, the nurse practitioner and physician assistant who prescribes buprenorphine can write prescriptions for up to 100 patients or fewer at any one time. So the numbers of patient access equal out, but the provider-to-patient ratio is different in this particular bill. This bill actually goes a little further, too, and it prohibits cash-only payment for services at licensed OBOTs, and it requires those OBOTs to be credentialed and seek reimbursement for services provided through TennCare. Also requires those OBOTs to be accepting new TennCare patients for MAT treatment. So the provision that previously would have allowed a patient to pay cash only for their treatment in a licensed OBOT goes away under this particular bill. So something to pay attention to specifically if you are a provider and a licensed OBOT that provides that service. And again, that's Public Chapter 771. Senate Joint Resolution 181 is another statement of intent or policy position by the legislature. And it recognizes that there's need for mental health parity and treatment parity in Tennessee, and declares that prior authorization requirements from insurance providers should be removed when a provider decides to seek medication-assisted treatment to a patient who is suffering from substance use disorder. So, and it also declares that substance use disorder and opioid use disorder should be insured in the same manner as other diseases such as diabetes and heart disease. Moving on to the general health insurance or health care portion of the summary, there was a bill that extended the Cover Kids program through TennCare from June. If you're not aware, the law in Tennessee requires that all agencies, a lot of programs, boards and commissions, departments to go for review to be extended on a periodic basis, and the Cover Kids program was one of those, and it extended the Cover Kids program to June 30th of 2025. The Access Tennessee Health Insurance Program was extended also to June 30th of 2025. The Annual Coverage Assessment Act that TennCare uses to draw down money from the federal government was enacted for 2020 through Public Chapter 642. And a couple other bills that I'll point out, and I'll be done, and I apologize for being lengthy. The Board of Social Work Licensure was extended to June 30th of 2026. The Tennessee Commission on Children and Youth was also extended this year. Finally, I will point out under the criminal justice section, there was a lot of discussion around sentencing related to drug school zones and safety zones. Senate Bill 2734-2517 makes some changes to that. So I know a lot of people are interested in that particular section. So that's Public Chapter 803. But again, if you have a copy of this, you can click on the public chapter links and get a direct link to that bill language. Also, I'm happy to take any questions about anything related to legislation this year, and thank you for your time and patience today. And again, happy to take questions that you may have.
Thank you, Kirby. Thank you, Zach. Do we have any questions for either Kirby or Zach related to the department or this legislative update? Great job, Zach. Thanks.
Thank you.
If not, always feel free to, you can either email directly to the department or you can send an email to me If you have a question regarding department processes or legislative information that's been shared or that you have concerns about, and I'll be glad to forward those to our counterparts at the department to try to get answers to those questions. So feel free at any time to send those questions to me. One other last-minute update about Children's Behavioral Health Safety Net, a program that we thought or were concerned would be cut when there was cuts made in the budget, the governor's office, but it was not cut, and we are very grateful for the advocacy of the department and others across the state to approve that this did not get cut from the budget, and that Behavioral Health Safety Net for Children did get passed and budgeted, and we are working now with the department to come up with some plans and some budget items to move forward with the Behavioral Health Safety Net for Children, something for uninsured kids, and we've been needing for our area for quite some time, so we're very grateful to have that, and you'll have more updates on this coming in the next meeting. Any other updates or reports from any department or any provider before we entertain to adjourn this meeting? If not, then I do want to thank everyone that was on the call, everyone that participated and gave reports, valuable information. We will keep, as I remind you at last again, we'll keep reaching out to committee members for enrollment, application and process, and also be keeping on your radar things that we need to be considering for our needs assessment. To be honest, before you know it, that we need to be thinking about for gaps in services or deficiencies in areas that we feel need to be addressed in our area that we want to include on this assessment when the time comes for that. So keep that on under your radar as well. Anything else before we will entertain to adjourn this meeting? If not, then I will entertain a motion to adjourn. Do I hear one?
Oh, this is Jill. I'll make a motion.
Thank you. Jill made the motion to adjourn. Do I hear a second?
This is Sam Flagel. I'll second.
Thank you, Sam. Motion is made and seconded. We will. Our next meeting is scheduled for Tuesday, November the 17th at 10 a.m. Until further notice, we are still looking at virtual meetings, but if the opportunity is lifted that we no longer have to do virtual and we have the capacity, we will look at face-to-face. But, again, you'll have more information on that prior to the November meeting. Again, the November meeting is November 17th, 10 a.m., and more information coming about that at that point. Thank you all for being on the call. Thank you to the department. Thanks, Kirby. Thanks, Zach. Thanks for all the folks, Nita, Sam, Melissa, Courtney, for giving some reports. Appreciate you. Thanks for everyone else, and we look forward to hearing from you. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye, all.